different fights. I was there at the little big horn.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Privacy versus the Rise of Surveillance Tech on Monday, November 18th from 6:30 to 8:30 at the Northwest Academy in Portland. Cyrus Farivar, author of the book Hobbyist Data, will speak on legal and privacy history and what our rights are currently, and how law enforcement agencies and companies can collect and use our private details, often without our knowledge. Again, that's Privacy versus the Rise of Surveillance Tech with Cyrus Farivar on Monday, November 18th from 6:30 to 8:30 at the Northwest Academy, 1130 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio of the Working Class, by the Working Class, for the Working Class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel.
Hey, Stephen.
We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers, and we host every second Monday of the month, which is Armistice Day today. We typically interview educators and we talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today on the phone, we have Josh Austin and Aaron Fowler. Welcome.
Soon we will have our two guests, and they will be joining us from Berkeley, California.
We can't silence them for too long.
They must be heard.
And you know, today is Armistice Day.
You mentioned that.
You know, some people want to call it Veterans Day. I don't think so.
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
We're hearing breathing. We hear breathing. Is that you, Josh?
Can you hear me talking?
Yes, yeah. We can.
Okay. How's
all right.
It going?
Hey, nice to have you on. And I'm not sure, do we also have Aaron on? Okay, we don't have Aaron on right now. Hopefully our engineer is working on that. How are you doing, Josh?
I'm pretty good, thank you.
Well, we're going to go ahead and get started, and hopefully our engineer will be able to get Aaron on the phone real soon here. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your teaching background and experience and what inspired you to become a teacher?
Okay, well, I've been teaching for about 20 years in special education and mostly in the Bay Area. I did start substitute teaching in San Diego a number of years ago, and during that time I taught in some special education classrooms, and I fell in love with the population of students with intellectual disabilities, with moderate to severe disabilities is what my credential is in, and I ended up getting a master's in that. And I always felt the need to stand up for these students who were kind of an underdog element, and I've empathized with them. So it's always been a rewarding job for me.
And it sounds like we're joined by Aaron.
Aaron, are you on? No, apparently Aaron is not on. Okay. Josh, were you done answering your question? I felt like we...
Yeah, I mean, that's my background. I mean, what inspired me to be a teacher, yeah. My mom was a teacher as well. I just felt like the right thing to do.
So yeah.
I don't have much more on it, yeah.
Great. Thank you. Tell us what your involvement is with your union and union caucuses, and also specifically include what your involvement is in UCOR.
Okay, well, I am a site rep at my school where I work, Berkeley High School, and I represent the special ed teachers, and I'm also an organizer for Berkeley Federation of Teachers, my union. And as far as a caucus, we don't have a real caucus. There was a former caucus, but it's not really active anymore. We do have an active rank and file group at Berkeley High School in our contract action team, or CAT, it's called. And some of the other sites are organizing from the bottom up as well, doing more independent organizing. And we are working on connecting the activists and organizers from the different sites to form a network and also connect back to the statewide movement. In California, huge state, we don't have a statewide caucus.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the larger locals like UTLA, Los Angeles, and Oakland have had caucuses or still have caucuses that we've tried to connect through UCOR, which is the United Caucus of Rank and File Educators. And last year we had some meetings in the Bay Area and some phone meetings with different rank and file members of different unions throughout the state. And we formed a group called California Educators United. It used to be called California Educators Rising.
Mm-hmm.
And we use this Facebook group and emails and other means, different meetings on phone and in person, to support each other and share resources across the state. And it's really been challenging to unite the huge and diverse state, but we're making progress and we are keeping the hope alive. So we do have two state unions, the California Federation of Teachers and the California Teachers Association.
Uh-huh.
And we have a goal to take more coordinated statewide actions and also to connect nationally with the Red for Ed movement. So, you know, we're growing and we're discussing our options right now and trying to do what we can to unify. statewide and in our local. It's all connected.
Great. I'm wondering if Aaron is on the line with us.
I am.
Oh, yay.
Aaron.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Hi.
Hey, so Josh has actually been on our show once before, but you haven't. So tell us a little bit about your teaching background and experience.
Okay. Well, I'm a Berkeley Unified High School teacher, and I work at Berkeley High teaching seniors. But I've been in education for over 20 years. I taught middle school, and I started out in Oakland for 7 years. And so that's my background. I've been teaching middle school and high school humanities, and recently became really involved with union organizing probably about 2 years ago.
Great. Thank you.
So I guess we'll just dive into some of the activity that's been going on that we've read about. Recently, there was a petition campaign around special education working conditions and student learning conditions. Can you tell us a little bit about that campaign?
Yeah, I can speak on that. A little bit of the background is, in special education, we have a lot of paperwork to do, and it increases every year. It's very important that we do this right because it's legally binding and we can get lawsuits. A lot of pressure to do this work, and it takes a lot of our time away from working with students and collaborating with other staff. So we have an intense workload. We also have high caseloads, because California, in the ed code, in the law, there's a 28 student maximum caseload. Mm-hmm. But that's too high for any case manager, and especially doesn't meet the needs of our model. In Berkeley, we have an inclusive education model where nearly all our students are educated in general education settings.
Yes.
So there's a lot of collaboration, a lot of meetings with other colleagues. And in addition to that paperwork, so these caseloads were just the caseloads that we have currently are untenable. And right now, at the end of last year, we had a lot of vacancies. We had people leaving, a lot of turnover, because it's just impossible to sustain this job. So we started a group of site reps from elementary, middle, and high school. We got together, the special ed site reps got together and had a meeting, and we invited our union president, and we invited all our special ed members to attend. And it was really an event session. Everyone was talking about how difficult their jobs are and how we need change. And so this was leading up to our contract campaign that started last year. Mm-hmm. And from that first initial meeting that we organized ourselves, it wasn't really an official union meeting. We formed a working group within the union structure. And from that, we did research. We looked at other contracts in other districts, and we started developing our own proposed language for our contract negotiations. And we developed a campaign to coincide with our major our contract campaign had a theme to it, which was sustainability, which was one of our slogans was keep teachers in Berkeley. So mm-hmm. Our special ed campaign fit nicely into that, because we were having, more than any other area, we were having the problem of not being able to keep teachers in Berkeley. So it was a working condition and student learning conditions demand that we had, that we developed around caseload caps, limits on our caseload size, and our number of assessments that we have to do, those legally binding assessments that are part of our paperwork. So we started doing actions. We started doing photographs with holding placards that said caseload caps, and sending those to the superintendent and the school board members. And the petition was an idea I got from Philadelphia. There's a caucus in Philadelphia called the Working Educators. Mm-hmm. And they did a petition around building conditions, I guess. So there's asbestos and toxic materials in their buildings, and they did a huge petition drive, and then they turned it into a poster, like a massive poster with all the signature pages attached to it. So we did something similar in a very short time period. In 3 weeks, we collected 1,000 signatures in a pretty small local. We only have like 900 members. Hmm. And we did this at every site, probably got pretty much every member to sign it, and turned it into a poster, and we presented it at a school board meeting and read the petition, and then we had little copies of it, like miniature copies of it, and I delivered it to the superintendent, and that was really powerful. That was like towards the very end of our negotiations process, and we ended up winning Case Hold Cops, which was against, we expected something, but it was beyond our expectations because the district had stalled for so long in the negotiations. They wouldn't give anything. They kept saying, it costs money, we don't have money, but we kept pushing this demand, and we ended up getting caseload caps and assessment limits.
What were the caps? So, their numbers?
It's a phased-in thing over 3 years. So after the third year, the caps are going to be 21 for mild, moderate, and 20. And sorry, 21 for mild, moderate disabilities, and 11 for moderate to severe. Mm. And in California, I think there's one other district in San Diego that has caseload caps of 20, but nothing specifically for moderate to severe. And I think that ours, we also have the assessment limits. It's one of the, at least one of the top two in the state, mm-hmm. in terms of protections. So pretty proud of that.
Yeah.
And we can go back next year and get, and you know, we're going to start bargaining again next year. And if this is a trial or this is a pilot, if it, we this is permanent language, but you know, we could always expand on it now that we have the paradigm shift that we didn't have caseload caps before, you know, above and beyond the California state law of 28, so we just dropped it down to 21. And an average, we also have an average of 20, so it's right around 20 or 21. Average of 20 and cap of 21.
So I just want to ask kind of a clarifying question, and it sounds like mm-hmm. a really like an amazing empowerment of rank and file members. It sounds like with your union leadership, your particular community of educators, special education teachers, were able to craft language and demands that specifically impact your working conditions with support from your union leadership. Is that the case?
Yeah, that's very much the case. We started a campaign with rank and file members, and then the union leadership supported us, and then we pushed it further, and they supported that, and we just kept going and would not let it go, and we kept it front and center. And I think it was important. It added to our campaign. It added an element of common good demands, like bargaining for the common good, like Chicago pioneered, and LA and Oakland piggybacked on that. So it's not just for salary and working conditions, but it's for the students too, because these are our most needy students, and it's an equity issue that they receive the support that they need.
Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to KBO Portland. This is Labor Radio, and we have Josh Austin and Aaron Fowler, both from Berkeley, both teachers there. Tell us about organizing your Wildcat Sick Out at Berkeley High School and the rally outside the school.
Sure. So, just to be really clear about the background of that work, I mean, we had already done several years of organizing at Berkeley High around very much smaller actions that were much lower stakes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when UCLA was on strike and Oakland was on strike, you know, we would encourage teachers to wear red and take a photo mm-hmm. of themselves standing in solidarity to post on social media. That was a small ask. And at first it was, you know, 5, 6, 7 teachers during lunch. And then we became a little bit more systematic about how we invited folks to show up in these ways. So we started sending out, you know, half-slip invitations to the photo. And one time we took a photo with, you know, over 80 staff members where everyone was wearing red and we had signs. And we learned through these littler, smaller actions about what it would take to communicate with our employees, because Berkeley High has over 220 certificated teachers, and then another, what I think, about 100 classified staff as well. And so, you know, we created systems. We, you know, sent out invites, and we would use chocolate. And then we would have floor captains that would pass those invites out. And that was a way of encouraging participation. These were small steps. And then last year, the May 22nd day of action that took place in Sacramento became a moment to really flex our power. And so we, in concert with our union, virtually closed down Berkeley High by getting all of the teachers on board to go to Sacramento to rally for increased state funding of education. Mm-hmm. And so these were all experiences that were building our capacity to communicate with each other, to get people to see their participation as powerful. And so when we ended up in negotiations towards the end and people became very dissatisfied, by then we had some systems in place to use to encourage conversation and make decisions collectively. So just to go back to, you know, maybe why this wildcat occurred in the first place, you know, it's probably pretty unusual for a wildcat to happen before impasse, but we were in a very particular place because our negotiations were centering around a possible parcel tax, which would have that is going to be put on the ballot in March. We were under a strange deadline. At this point, we had the second to last negotiations happen. Some great movement got made around SPED demands, but there was no real update around our compensation demands, mm-hmm. which we had been very clear needed to be in the double digits over 2 years in order to address the sustainability crisis that's happening in Berkeley because it's such an expensive place to live.
Right.
And so because of that, we, you know, teachers were like, wow, we're in the 11th hour. There's one more scheduled negotiation. And, you know, some said our district kind of has us over a barrel because we knew that both the district and the union really wanted to sign a tentative agreement so that that parcel tax could go into effect and be put on the ballot in March. But that would mean that the school board had to have the language solidified by their November 6th school board meeting. So we were under this kind of really intense deadline and also realizing that we didn't have any news about what the district was going to put on the table on that last negotiation session. So teachers were talking to each other, concerned that we didn't have a lot of leverage. Mm-hmm. And a teacher finally said, let's call for a meeting at lunch and let's put forth a proposal of discussing the potential for a wildcat strike.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you know, we got together, we planned an agenda, we had a teacher who has experience facilitating. 80 staff members showed up. It was unprecedented in the band room. And we had a very quick, 40-minute meeting where we agreed that if we had an overwhelming majority that voted that they were, yes, interested in pursuing a wildcat strike, that we would then put forth an online survey with one question, will you participate or not?
Okay.
And by 10 p.m. that evening, well, first of all, in the meeting, we overwhelmingly voted, I think there was like maybe 80 to 90 people in the room, 69 people voted in favor mm-hmm. of doing a wildcat strike on the last day of negotiations while it was in session. And that night by 10 p.m. we had 80 votes yes. And that was kind of what the bar we set was, we're not going to do this unless we have 80 votes. And just to be fair to another contingent of our staff, there were people who had engaged in a much smaller spontaneous wildcat strike the Monday prior.
Yes,
and I think that may have fed into some of the thinking of the employees, but it was a very collective decision, and then it happened extremely quickly. But because we had already had systems built where we had, you know, very tediously collected all of the non-professional emails of most of the staff, and we're still doing that. We're still collecting those emails. We had a system in place for discussion and sending out a form that would be not viewable by management. And so that decision got put into place very quickly.
I'm curious about what sort of risks people talked about. And I've heard you mostly referring to it as a strike, not a sick out. My understanding from...
It is a sick out. It is a sick out. I mean, I think the legal, like, the correct term is a sick out.
Okay.
Wildcat strike certainly sounds more fun. I think we really enjoyed having our silk screens of our wildcat strike.
Yeah.
And, but technically, because it's not going, you know... And it's also really important to recognize that this was done not as an anti-union stance. It was actually very much in support of our negotiations team.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And we became very clear about that, that we were, in fact, our goals were in alignment with what our negotiations team was asking for And so this was a way to sort of create that critical mass and pressure. Mm-hmm. And the day of the Wildcat, unless you want to ask a question, I don't want to keep going on.
Oh, I was just curious if the district had issued any sort of warning when they got word of this sick out.
Or was it too quick?
To be fair to Berkeley Unified, they have dealt with multiple situations where teachers have felt very strongly about participating in the climate march. They had already had an experience of us leaving in mass for May 22nd.
Mm-hmm.
And it became clear that there's always that risk, especially for untenured teachers. And we made it very clear that untenured teachers were not expected to participate. But I don't know, Josh, you can speak to this, but there was a pretty clear sense that they weren't really interested in creating retaliation or a culture of fear with us.
Okay.
In our contract, we can take personal leave days, and it's kind of vague in that it says, like, you can take personal leave days for the following reasons, but it doesn't say these are the only reasons. So people have tested that before. It's been one teacher activist went to a protest or something, and then the district threatened to dock her pay, but it didn't even go to a formal, even before it went to the formal grievance process, the district backed down. So we have, you know, that institutional memory that we can use these personal leave days. So I think everyone was confident that we wouldn't get docked pay. And if we all did it together, one of the things we agreed to at the meeting was, we're all in this together. If anyone gets attacked, we're all going to stand up for them. I almost welcome it. You know, if it happened, then it would just make us stronger if someone got docked pay or something, especially an untenured teacher. Some people didn't participate who were not tenured. They didn't feel confident doing it. Mm-hmm. And we didn't put pressure on them. We just said, do what you got to do. We totally understand.
And even further, I mean, even to take that a little bit further, in fact, we had teachers of, for example, English language newcomers who we knew wanted to stay on campus because even with advance notice, a lot of those students still show up at school, and we supported that. So it's not a strike in the sense that people were not allowed to cross it, like we're told not to cross a picket line. It's very a different action, you know.
Yeah.
We gathered in mass, you know, over 200 people called in sick or took their personal leave, and then we had a massive rally in front of the school, and then we marched to the district office, and we actually entered the district building and were in the hallway outside of where the negotiations were being held. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of energy in terms of it being a very visible, loud rally. Like, you were coming to participate, like you were taking that personal leave day to then make your voice heard, and that was the key goal, as opposed to creating a picket line, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, unfortunately, we're almost out of time, and I'm going to let you choose your own adventure last question.
Ooh, fun.
You could talk about some of the big wins of your contract, or what you learned from the experience, or what's next. And please keep it to about a minute response.
I mean, I definitely think that there's lots of different opinions about the contract and its quote-unquote wins, so I want to defer off of that. I will say what we learned is that there is a healthy and joyful tension between rank and file and institutionalized union leadership, and that's actually a great thing, and that membership has to organize itself and talk to itself and find inspiration in each other and listen to each other as a way of creating the momentum and leverage the union needs in order to accomplish its goals. And so a client service relationship with union leadership for us is an old paradigm that really doesn't fit well with the Red for Ed movement, that the rank and file really need to participate, and there's so many different ways that people can plug in when you're working at a site. Josh, you want to add anything?
We won 12% over 2 years, contingent on the parcel tax passing, which is, I think, one of the best contract wins in the state. So objectively, it's successful. Some people don't agree with the parcel tax. It's progressive. We want to get funding from the state, and that's our next move, is going to the state to get progressive taxation. So we're poised to do that with this win.
Well, thank you both so much. It was really great to hear your organizing and actually very specifically what you did to move your rank and file members to this empowerment. So thank you both for joining us.
Yes, I'm inspired.
Yeah, same here.
Yay! Thank
and thank you to our engineer, Tammy. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Stephen. This is Rachel Haynes, and you've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 to catch another Labor Radio show.
Thanks, Josh. Thanks, Aaron.
Yeah, thank you.
KBOO is getting ready for our annual book and record sale.
This is a great time to clean out those closets and shelves and turn your old books, records, and CDs into cash for community radio.
Bring them to KBOO Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. till 7 p.m.
We are accepting donations of books, vinyl records, CDs, and DVDs through Saturday, December 14th. The sale will be held on December 21st. Stay tuned for details.
Your unwanted books, records, and DVDs are treasure to someone else. Help them find new homes while raising money for our community radio station, KBOO.
If you have questions or want to arrange for a pickup of donations, please email volunteer@kboo.org or call 503-231-8032, extension 213.
The time is 6:30, and you are listening to Prison Pipeline.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good.